House Senate State Affairs Committee, please come to order. We have it's 9 a.m. We have Senators McGuire, Senator Huggins, Stoltz, Vice Chair Coghill, and Senator Wilikowski. We are at full strength. We're continuing our deliberation on PSUM, P-S-U-M, what's the acronym for the Marijuana Initiative. We are continuing the presentations we ran over last time, and we still didn't get to all the departments. We're continuing the last few departments that we didn't get to, Department of Health and Social Service, Department of Environmental Conservation, and we still have, that we truncated was Cynthia Franklin, who will continue to be a major part in our discussions as the regulatory agency. And we have some folks that were in town for the latter part of the meeting from the business community to just talk about the issue of drug testing and what their mandates are for drug testing with or without the enactment of this marijuana initiative. And in addition, there's correspondence in there from a few business entities, general contractors, and one from the National Guard, correspondence about the issue of eligibility for military service in the relation of marijuana. Just something that we're not making judgments or making any statutory recommendations on those. This is for public awareness on what and there's also there's a email from Mr. Schulte, who is from one of the affiliated marijuana groups. It was following up on the discussion of the term SALT in the initiative. I think the major elucidation it provided is that there may have been inadvertencies or mistakes in the initiative, and that might prompt that there might be a corrective role for the legislative branch to on some of these things. As they, it seems pretty clear they're not even aware why the term SALT was in the initiative, and certainly a lot of us jumped to the possibility they might be talking about bath salts, which the legislature in the public safety arena has spent a lot of time trying to figure out. And so I guess that points out that not everybody got these things exactly as they intended, or there might be, and I certainly wouldn't want to allude that it might have been a Trojan horse for another thing besides the marijuana. So that's in there, evaluated as members as we're deliberating. Senator Huggins? Okay. Anything for the good of the order before we start? We will start, Mr. Newman, and Dr. Butler will be online. Our apologies. He flew up to testify, and we didn't get to him. That's always a part of the process I hate, even more so when it's a member of the public that comes and doesn't get to testify. So my apologies to Dr. Butler, but we're happy to have him online.
My name is Tony Newman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Before I start, just a sound check. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. This is Dr. Butler.
Very good.
Is this Dr. Butler?
Sorry, I'm getting a little echo. But for the record, my name is Jay Butler. I'm Chief Medical Officer in the Department of Health and Social Services. I am also the Director of the Division of Public Health. With me is Tony Newman at the computer, and he will forward slides for me. What I hope to do this morning is briefly provide an overview of the short and long-term effects of recreational marijuana. I will not try to address therapeutic uses of medical marijuana. I will also talk a little bit about what we've learned from Colorado on the impact on the healthcare system, talk a little bit about what we know and how much we don't know about the impact of legalization on health. And finally, try to address, Mr. Chairman, your question from Tuesday about what does all this mean for developing policy and regulation. So, Tony, if you could forward the slide. the short-term health effects of marijuana are the ones that are best understood and include impaired short-term memory. Controlled studies in humans have shown that immediately after using marijuana, learning and retention of new information becomes more difficult. They also show a temporary loss of muscle coordination, increasing the risk of injury to self as well as others, which combined with the effects of altered judgment interfere with the ability to drive a car or a boat, operate a snow machine, or fly an airplane. THC blood levels as low as 2 to 5 nanograms have been shown to impair driving skills, and it's estimated that a blood level of 5 is comparable to a blood alcohol level of 0.08 when it comes to abilities to drive a car. At high doses, which I would want to point out may be intentional or unintentional, central nervous system stimulation may lead to agitation, paranoia, a feeling of doom. While most of us may see reefer madness as a comedy due to the overacting, I think we have to be very honest and say frank psychosis from high doses of marijuana does occur, and certainly is reported by my colleagues in the emergency department. The period of stimulation may be followed by sedation, which can be quite deep, particularly in young children who are unintentionally exposed and has actually led to respiratory failure in young children. Should also point out that there's no specific antidote for marijuana toxicity. Moving on to long-term effects. Next slide, Tony. Good data on the longer-term effects of chronic marijuana use are less clear, but the emerging science does indicate some risk. There is a risk for addiction. Roughly 1 in 10 people who try marijuana will at some point in their lives meet the definition of dependence. These risks are greater with earlier age of initiation and with heavier use.
Is that a 10% addiction rate? Is that what, is that your testimony, sir?
Have symptoms of dependence. Some of those symptoms include tolerance for marijuana, requiring a higher dose of THC to get the desired effect, and also the cannabis withdrawal syndrome, which when cannabis is not available, there's a feeling of craving, irritability, sleep difficulties, anxiety, and depression. With regular use, marijuana may alter brain development and function. Epidemiological studies have indicated that adults who smoke marijuana regularly during adolescence may have impaired neural connectivity in the brain, and the areas that are affected appear to be those that control alertness, self-awareness, learning, memory, and executive function, meaning the way we synthesize everything that comes into our brains for decision-making. Marijuana use has also been associated with poor educational outcomes, cognitive impairment, and diminished life satisfaction. However, I want to point out that association does not prove causation, and we don't know that people who are prone to be dissatisfied with life may be more likely to use marijuana rather than marijuana causing dissatisfaction with life. Additionally, Tony, next slide, epidemiological studies have also shown that use of marijuana has been strongly associated with use of other substances such as alcohol and tobacco. Again, I'll stress associated, not necessarily causative. Also been associated with symptoms of anxiety and depression. There is some evidence that marijuana use may unmask symptoms of schizophrenia, at least in people who have a genetic predisposition to this. And finally, some of the strongest evidence for long-term health effects are the increasing symptoms of chronic bronchitis, primarily cough and sputum production in persons who regularly smoke marijuana, fairly similar to what's seen in tobacco smokers. And these symptoms tend to resolve in chronic marijuana smokers after they stop smoking. Next slide, please. Moving on to the effect of marijuana on the health system, we can learn a fair bit from the experience in Colorado. In the 2 years since legalization, 31 people have been hospitalized in the burn center with marijuana-related burns, mostly associated with using butane as a solvent to extract THC. In 21 of these cases, skin grafting was required. And I'm sure many more marijuana-related burns occur, but the burn center would only be seeing people with the most severe burns. It's worth noting that we don't have a burn center in Alaska, and Seattle is the nearest facility that can provide care to people with severe burns. Another effect resulting in increased healthcare utilization is a short-term effect that I didn't mention earlier, but it's well known to, again, my emergency room colleagues, and that's the cyclic vomiting syndrome, also known as cannabis hyperemesis syndrome. This illness is associated with heavy use, and some persons may be particularly susceptible. Symptoms include abdominal pain, sweating, severe vomiting. For reasons that I think are poorly understood, hot showers seem to be the best treatment. Two Denver hospitals indicated a doubling in ER visits for cyclic vomiting syndrome during the first couple of years after liberalization of the medical marijuana laws in Colorado. Third effect on the healthcare system in Colorado has been THC intoxication, primarily from edible products. It's generally recommended, and you can't see my air quotations, that 10 to 30 milligrams of THC are needed for intoxication. Those are, I realize, lower than the numbers that Ms. Franklin used in her presentation. I got mine off of some of the marketing sites. And of course, that's also driven by depending on the size and experience of the user. Some of the products sold in Colorado have had much higher amounts than 10 to 30 milligrams, 100 milligrams or more. There was reference on Tuesday made to a 200 milligram product. And this amount of THC may be packed into a single cookie or a package of gummy bears. Compared to smoking marijuana, THC blood levels rise more slowly after ingestion and may not really rise to significant levels until half an hour after eating. So it's possible to keep eating and or drinking unaware of the effects until quite a bit of THC is on board. And obviously the greatest risk is for unintentional consumption, particularly by children and also people like me who've never eaten less than an entire cookie in their entire life. Next slide, Tony, is a table. It summarizes the experience with emergency department visits for ingestion at one Denver hospital among children younger than 12 years of age before and after liberalization of the medical marijuana laws in 2009 in Colorado. Marijuana ingestions accounted for 2.3% of all the ED visits for ingestion compared to none prior to the liberalization. The majority of these visits were ingestion of edible products that were not identified as marijuana products. Two of these kids actually required admission to the intensive care unit. Following legalization, it's been reported that total number of marijuana-related emergency department visits in Denver area increased by 30% from roughly 10,000 in 2012 to 13,000 in 2013. Next slide. We're learning a lot about health and marijuana, but there's still much that's poorly understood. There's also, I think, caveats in the discussion. I've already mentioned the fact that association does not necessarily prove causation. So when people talk about various health effects, there is varying strength of the scientific evidence to support those. It's important to remember that can take years for the effects of marijuana use to manifest. Most of the data that are available on the health effects are based on smoking marijuana and not on use of edibles. Additionally, I think someone had earlier pointed out that the THC content of seized marijuana has increased significantly, as much as fourfold over the past 30 years. This is not your father's joint, and many of the studies on health effects were based on use of lower potency products. We don't know a lot about the effects of prenatal exposure on brain development of the fetus. Data collected by the Division of Public Health indicate that over 7% of women in Alaska reported using marijuana during pregnancy, and that's about twice what the rate was 10 years ago. We don't really know a lot about the risk of cancer specific to marijuana. That assessment in epidemiological studies is somewhat difficult because of the high rates of concurrent tobacco use in marijuana users, and this also makes it tougher to assess the risks that may be present for cardiovascular disease such as heart attack or stroke. As we learn more about the health risks from marijuana, we certainly want to be able to deliver those messages in an effective manner to the public. And the Department of Health and Social Services is developing a website to try and provide the best information to the public in a manner that's useful. The specific effects of secondhand marijuana smoke exposure is not known, although in general, particulates are respiratory irritants, and inhalation of smoke, whether it's from a forest fire or a nearby burning blunt, certainly are best avoided. There's little known about risks of vaping and of marijuana extracts using e-cigarettes. I think it's important to look at the progress we've made with tobacco and the declining use of tobacco and some of the declines in rates of tobacco-related illness, and also recognize that among youth particularly, nicotine use is increasing again, primarily through use of e-cigarettes. The final concern about e-cigarettes also is the behavior could certainly renormalize the behavior of smoking. Next slide, Tony. I know we're all looking for clarity and bright lines, and I think the bigger question is, what are the health effects of legalization? And while there are still areas of uncertainty, I think it gets even a little more hazy as we look at what will be the impact of legalization. And I wanted to just briefly touch on four factors that the effects will depend on. One is the effect of legalization on the prevalence of use, as well as the age-specific prevalence of use among Alaskans. We really don't know what proportion of the population who do not currently use marijuana will begin to do so after legalization. We also don't know, will that increase primarily be among younger people who will be more susceptible to the effects, or among all ages, or primarily among older people who currently may not use marijuana because they may be more likely to avoid use of illegal substances. Second, it depends on the effect of legalization on frequency and intensity of use. No matter how many new marijuana users there are, another critical unknown is whether the current users will use marijuana more frequently and whether they will use marijuana for a greater proportion of their lives. If the overall health risks are cumulative and legalization leads to earlier initiation or discontinuation later in life, the adverse effects would be greater. Third, legalization effects will depend on the modalities of use, smoking, vaping, eating, drinking infused beverages. The way marijuana is used may change following legalization, and the modalities of use will probably be influenced by accessibility, what sales venues are allowed, be driven by marketing and advertising as well. And finally, with legalization, the patterns of use will likely be influenced by regulations regarding form and content of marijuana products and controls on where and when marijuana can be used. I would expect that taxation would influence use. There's strong evidence that taxes on tobacco have reduced rates of cigarette smoking and particularly have reduced rates of smoking initiation among teens. So what does this mean for policy and regulation for legal marijuana? The discussion of definitions by Ms. Franklin and Mr. Casanova have already outlined some of the needs regarding more clearly defined terms. And I'd also like to highlight four additional issues. The most important is, as has already been highlighted by Ms. Franklin, is edibles. That currently in Colorado, some of the packaging is very attractive to children. It also can be just generally confusing because in the humorous packaging sometimes leads to identical fonts or trademark logos to what's in other products, and it may not be apparent to someone who's not wearing their glasses that a Klondike bar is different from a Klondike bar. Labeling, including the concentration of THC and serving size, is also going to be very important. Three additional issues, actually. The regulation of marketing and advertising, I think, will heavily influence use. We certainly know from the experience with cigarettes that advertising influences use. I don't know currently that we know can marijuana sellers, for instance, have ads on Saturday morning TV. Those are some of the issues that I think need to be worked through. The third is the type of sales venues, whether liquor stores could add marijuana licenses to their sales, or do we require freestanding sales outlets? What about fairs? Is the state fair going to have a marijuana garden? These are some of the issues that need to be addressed as we continue the discussion of what is the definition of a public place. And finally, I would want to make the case for comprehensive regulations and regulations that are in harmony with those for tobacco use and e-cigarettes. It doesn't really make a lot of sense to have areas where one cannot legally smoke tobacco but can smoke marijuana. Also, marijuana smoking is really so 1970. Concentrates for edibles and vaping need to be addressed as well. While fewer of our teens are taking up tobacco smoking than ever, the rates of e-cigarettes have increased 3 to 4-fold nationally in the past 2 years. And nationally, there's more teenagers that use e-cigarettes than smoke tobacco cigarettes. And clearly, these devices can deliver THC. So I recognize it's a complex topic. I hope I've provided some overview of the health effects. There's much that we don't know. I hope I've been able to highlight some of what we do know, and I'd be happy to take your questions.
Thank you, Dr. Butler. I appreciate the department laying out some of your professional concerns, probably consistent with your constitutional charge under Article 7, Section 4, the promotion and protection of public health. I don't want this to be viewed as we're re-debating whether or not Proposition 2 should pass, but this is the Walker administration's highlighting some of their concerns, some of their health concerns, fulfilling your constitutional responsibilities as a health officer, I assume. Is that correct, Dr. Butler?
That is correct. We're looking at if marijuana is soon to be a legal substance, and addressing the question of how do we best have legal marijuana used in a way that has the least amount of negative effect on health.
You know, I appreciate you outlining, laying out your budget and health and concerns within the, I think, within the constitutional scope of your department. It's given us a lot of guidance. Thank you. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Dr. Butler, Charlie Huggins from Wasilla. I was just thinking as you were going through and talking about some of the parallels with tobacco smoking and marijuana, and as I recall, sometimes for employment, but particularly for insurance, there's a special section on habits, and I think smoking is one of them. Would you anticipate that based on what you've told us today that people that are in the insurance business, health insurance in particular, that that would be a consideration if you were a marijuana user, just like if you were a tobacco user going forward for your rates or other considerations?
Senator Huggins, through the chair, I'm not a insurance executive or a broker, but I certainly am familiar with the type of health assessment surveys that are done by insurance companies as well as employers. They oftentimes do include tobacco and alcohol use as well as a number of other personal health-related habits. I have seen some, not necessarily related to the insurance industry, that have asked about marijuana and other drug use as well. In terms of whether or not insurers are likely to add that to the lists or somehow use those data to determine rates, I would have to defer to someone in that industry.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, and thank you, Dr. Butler. I appreciate your answer. The other one, if you have the information, you know, I've heard over the years that we in Alaska produce the best marijuana because I suppose the high THC content. What would high THC content in Alaska mean? Do you know what that number would be?
Senator Huggins, through the chair, are you when you say what that number would be, are we talking about specific concentration within the marijuana?
Yeah.
Again, I would probably want to defer to the producers to answer that question. In terms of sort of national averages of THC content in marijuana, or at least some of the experience in Colorado, I should say, not national. My understanding is the THC content has increased to around 12% from much lower content 30 years ago, about 3%. So just in terms of a ballpark, if the producers are saying that the Alaska marijuana would have a higher content, I would think it's going to be in that ballpark of 12%.
The Department of Revenue might suggest.
I'm not the best expert to address that question, for sure.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Dr. This is Senator Coghill. You actually anticipated a couple of my questions, but I will probably ask a pointed question on some of the peer review potential. Has there been peer review that you know of on smoke toxins? Do you know of any?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, there have been some analyses. I know there is a lot of ongoing work in terms of the question of whether there's residual THC content in exhaled marijuana smoke. My understanding is there is some. I think, as has already been addressed in earlier testimony, it may be qualitatively different from tobacco smoke, just because the way someone smokes marijuana is different from tobacco, where rather than a short puff, it's a deep inhalation. It's generally held in the lungs as long as possible before exhalation. I don't know quantitatively how much THC or other materials might be in that secondhand smoke.
Thank you.
I know it's an area of great interest for researchers.
And then, thank you, Mr. Chairman, if I might, just one more. We had a pretty nice article in response from the Coalition of Responsible Cannabis Legislation. They talked about the difference between THC and CBD, which is the, and I can't even say the words properly, but one of them is the psychoactive component, and one is a pain management issue. The health benefits of the pain management has been something that has been forwarded, and we've had medical marijuana. From your perspective, has that been valuable? Has it been something that that you've been able to see beneficial? Is it so marginal that it's not even calculated at this point?
Yeah, thank you for that question, Senator Coghill. Through the chair, although didn't really come to talk about medical marijuana, I think it is an important question, and I'm happy to share my own clinical experience. My greatest amount of experience with medical marijuana was in caring for HIV patients. My background is infectious diseases physician, and particularly in the early 90s when I was working on a ward with 40 HIV patients in Atlanta, Georgia, we didn't have a lot of options for treating AIDS cachexia. In fact, at our hospital, oral Marinol, the pill form of THC, was not available. So we did make accommodations for patients that wanted to try using marijuana to try and stimulate appetite and stop the weight loss to be able to do so. I think it's important to point out, though, that's not an FDA-approved treatment. It was truly an empiric effort to be able to treat some of these patients who were really in dire straits. My only more recent experience has been with a single patient who was struggling with inability to eat and complete loss of appetite due to liver disease. And although we have a larger menu of FDA-approved agents, none have really worked. I didn't actually recommend marijuana, but he found that it worked for stimulating appetite for him. He had a card, and so that worked in that one case.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Thank you, Dr. Butler. You provided a lot of good information. I'd appreciate, as you work through the internal processes in the executive branch, that you've clearly stated some issues here, and if you could formalize these as you go through your commissioner and the chief of staff and, I guess, the governor, formalize some of these claims and findings and your professional opinions into recommendations for this committee and other committees on the health concerns, everything from you talked about the uncertainty about prenatal impacts, but I know we have Placardy, and that's pretty commonplace now, and the whole you mentioned a broad array of concerns, and as you go through your policy, whatever machinations you go through in the executive branch, we'd sure like these distilled into some specific recommendations that that the executive branch would endorse. This is going to be a team effort as we try to put the people's law into effect. So we want meaningful help from the executive branch. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Butler, is your department planning any sort of public awareness campaign to educate Alaskans on the effects of marijuana use?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, yes, we are starting primarily with a website to be able to get information out as quickly as possible. That is in development, and I don't yet have a timeline for when that will go live, but we're pulling together information both for the public as well as for providers. We don't really know, will we see an increase in healthcare utilization due to marijuana-related health effects, but we want to make sure that providers are aware of some of the health effects that are known. Just Googling marijuana in Alaska, pretending I was a young person trying to learn more about it, I didn't find a lot on health effects for Alaska, so we want to get that available as soon as possible.
Any other questions for Dr. Butler? Thank you very much. I appreciated your participation, and we look forward to Department of Health and Social Services and the executive branch formulating some of the points that you've certainly highlighted in this presentation into policy recommendations for the legislature and developing the bills. I know Senator McGuire would appreciate that too in the next iteration. So you can be a big help, it appears.
You're most welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Newman, as well, for your technical assistance. The Department of Environmental Conservation, we have one person here and one person online. Is that our dynamic?
More online.
More online. Are you going to be shepherding here, Mr. Rogers? Why don't you introduce your folks that will be testifying, and they'll formally introduce themselves for the records and outline the department's testimony is, or just framework it, and they'll detail it.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jeff Rogers with the Department of Environmental Conservation. I have Elaine Bussey Floyd on the line, and also Kimberly Stryker, who runs the food safety program, and Patrice McKinney, who runs the environmental health lab. I'll let them introduce themselves, they don't have any prepared testimony today, but they're there to answer questions, and I do believe that the director, Elaine Bussey Floyd, will introduce them and the department's general position on the subject.
And they will talk about the general aspects of your role in public health and safety protection, and the initiative pamphlet, the election pamphlet, referred to the crime lab as being a detection, and maybe we can, folks from the your facility, your testing facility that used to be in Palmer, and no, that's a source up, but I would like that highlighted as well, because I think there was some confusion when that was in the election pamphlet about the crime lab being the testing facility. So if we can, that could be elucidated.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and I'll defer to Ms. Floyd on that.
Thank you. Okay, folks that are online, I think you can decide among yourselves who will go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Elaine Bussey Floyd. For the record, that's Elaine Bussey Floyd, the Director of Environmental Health. As Mr. Rogers stated, we don't have prepared testimony, but we are available to answer questions, and I'll just give a brief overview of what we see, how we see our role. First of all, if marijuana product is considered a food, then our expertise is in regulating the production, handling, and sale of food offered to the public, and our food safety and sanitation program could regulate most aspects of the processing and handling of edible marijuana products under the Alaska Food Code. However, marijuana and cannabis are now considered drugs. Implementation of the initiative depends on how marijuana products are viewed legally. So that's going to be an important distinction for the legislature to take up. The Alaska Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act contains language very similar to the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, and it outlines our authorities relative to food and cosmetics. Also, it outlines Department of Health and Social Services authorities relative to the oversight of drugs and devices.
And Ms. Floyd, can you talk about the comparative? I think most Americans and Alaskans are familiar with the Food and Drug Administration and its role, and they have both food and drugs, and compare what their mission and abilities are and what yours are. So you're discussing this, please. Did we lose her?
I'm not exactly sure how to approach that.
Do they have capabilities that we don't have? Do we need to expand your mission? And you can certify the safeness of food and the complication of drugs. That's just throw that into your discussion, because that's part of our trying to figure out how to do the safe regulation of this. And what you are able and not able to do, if you can just amplify on that so we have a better understanding of how to approach this for the public safety aspect, food and safety aspect of food products, and what you're able to do or not able to do, or the complications that it's also a drug as well, or depends on, I think we're all a little unsure of what it is. So.
Well, yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. Part of the confusion and what still has to be determined is the standards of identity. There's no established standards of identity or composition relative to safe THC consumption levels or disclosure of additives that can cause the product to be more potent. And because we get our guidance from the FDA, who does not have any, they can't provide us with any technical expertise or science-based guidance or regulatory standards because the FDA hasn't approved marijuana as a safe and effective drug.
Okay, you can determine that it's appropriately baked, but not what happens to you after you're baked.
Yes, sir, exactly.
Okay. Well, I'm not trying to be flip, but I was trying to get it so I can understand things. I'm pretty simple. Senator Coghill.
And thank you. Certainly labeling is going to be something that we're going to have to figure out, and I think you're going to be able to do that. But tell us the capability that you've been able to determine, maybe from Washington or Colorado, on the movement of the different plants to determine both the THC level and the CBD level. Is that something that you're going to be able to do?
Senator, through the chair, we haven't done any research into that at this time because we're still uncertain that we have a role in this, depending on what legislation gets passed.
Yeah, and I just
essentially want... we see the Food Safety and Sanitation Program overseeing basic sanitation and food safety hazards and deferring to Commerce to deal with potency, serving sizes, and other marijuana-specific issues. That's consistent with how we work with them now with bars and breweries with the alcohol aspect. When alcohol is used in the preparation of food or the production of alcohol.
And, Mr. Chairman, that's actually a distinction that I was looking for. So you said it very well at the end. Thank you.
And, Ms. Floyd, do you anticipate being able to receive assistance from the Food and Drug Administration on or does the complication of federal law prevent that? Have you looked at that?
We have looked into that, and we don't there isn't assistance available to us from the FDA.
Because of the conflicting laws, or they don't provide assistance?
Both.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, just a comment on this, and then I'll give way, but this is for the Judiciary Chairman as well. Just in testimony this morning, the new Attorney General designee that's being going through confirmation said that does not support marijuana legalization in her testimony. So this is going to be a downward pressure on how we deal with it, just for what it's worth.
Mrs. Lynch?
Yeah.
Senator Wilikowski?
Ms. Floyd, do you have any recommended legislative changes at this time?
Senator, through the chair, no, I don't have recommended changes at this time.
Thank you.
Senator Huggins.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Floyd, genetically modified, in our society and quite frankly international, but in the U.S. of A., there's been a significant effort and even hyperizing in some groups of people to sensitize all of us to things that are genetically modified. And, yeah, I remember this past November I was driving across Iowa after bow hunting, and I listened to producers of corn seed talk about what a different kind of corn seed would do for you. And one of them, to my surprise, well, there's actually a corn seed that if you want to produce more ethanol, use that seed, and it'll produce more ethanol for you. So my assumption is that same effort at some point in time will be made in the area of marijuana, since it's both used to smoke and to use as a food product. But what should that mean to us, or should we pay attention to it? There's been a push, I know, by the genetically modified group that are sensitive to that about having that on labeling. Your thoughts?
Senator, through the chair, I'm sorry, I really don't have any expertise at all in GMO or how that might relate to marijuana.
Yeah, well, I guess I would encourage you to get some because you know, it's probably around the corner for us. That might be years, might be 10 years, but it's one of the things we have to be smart on. Thank you.
I think what we're hearing, an overall theme, and I think the witness testifying is constrained in her ability to answer these questions because they're about as prepared as a lot of other Alaskans are to try to cope with how to safely regulate this in the conflicting bodies of law. But as I don't want to overly press this witness, but I think she has given us some answers in the uncertainty and expressing some of the vagaries. So I think it's that has been helpful in that aspect that we have challenges and definitions and preciseness is going to be important on this. So it's even though Ms. Floyd isn't able to answer a lot of the questions and can't give us certain answers, I think that in itself is useful testimony and that we have challenges. Senator Coghill.
Mr. Chairman, I totally agree with you. And actually, the blank spots in their ability is tell us what the regulations are going to be. And so I think as we anticipate, we have a criminal bill that is being rewritten, but we're also going to have to hear from ABC and give whatever clarity of direction we can. So I thought the testimony was very important on just allowing us to hear what the question was. So thank you.
And I think this really amplifies the need for the executive branch to be a much more loud and forceful partner in helping us develop these. It can't just be, hey, we're for legalization, will of the people. Just, you know, the cliches aren't going to work. It's help us implement it. Senator McGuire?
Oh. I agree.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Rogers.
If I may, I understand the concern about DEC's role, but I can only represent that DEC is currently perceiving this through the ballot measure, which as we see it, quite specifically carves DEC off of the consideration. And until such time that there's legislation that does otherwise, it's difficult for us to have much of a sense of what is intended.
We're not trying to convey criticism. This is shared empathy and of the challenges. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, this is Elaine again. I just wanted to emphasize that the Food Safety and Sanitation Program is well prepared to handle the sanitation aspects related to the food product, if it becomes a food product.
And you do that job pretty well. That's a.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions? We'll revisit DEC and certainly give them more time to do it to formulate policy. And I understand Ms. Floyd can't come up with policy recommendations. She's got to go through other routes to do that, and that's where we're looking for assistance from the executive branch on this. Much of this is going to be implemented, it's all of it, after we've already gaveled out and hopefully April and moved on. It's going to be so much of this is going to be by regulations and dependent upon and strong dependence on the state agencies to carry out the policy the legislature develops in combination with the will of the people. So we're going to need a better roadmap of where we're going before we do leave this building in April. So we know it from Mr. Rogers. I know you're very familiar with the process, and I know you're a good public servant, and looking forward to your participation.
Thank you.
Thank you. We do. We're going to have Ms. Franklin over again, and we have some folks from the public that are here with various business organizations representing a lot of employers in Alaska, and the issue of drug testing. There's been a lot of confusion among users and potential users on what their responsibilities as employees are, and this is not to bring these people forward. It's not to make any judgments, but it's just to have them reflect what the current law, both federal and otherwise, is, and what the expectations of employers are. And there's a letter in there from General Bridges about the issue of recruitment and the use of marijuana. This is just to assist the public in awareness, informed consent when they do decide to use legal marijuana, knowing some of the ramifications they have in their potential work life. And totally just a public awareness aspect of the committee hearing. And I'd like to invite first forward Ms. Petro. Welcome.
Well, good morning. Thank you, Chairman Schultz and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rachel Petro, and I serve as the president and CEO of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce, and we're a statewide organization that represents all types of industries from Ketchikan to Barrow and, quite frankly, beyond. We have some Pacific Northwest and Canadian members as well. And we also represent most local chambers throughout the state, and we serve as the national partner for the National Association of Manufacturers here in the state. So it comes as no surprise to you all. We made it very public that the Alaska Chamber opposed Ballot Measure 2 as written, and frankly, I think the testimony that you've heard this morning and before is really underscores why we opposed it, and that is, frankly, the uncertainty and the lack of clarity. In particular, as you'll hear me say in various venues, uncertainty really is the enemy of business. We do require good, sound predictability and permitting and regulations. And so when we were looking at Ballot Measure 2, there's just a lot of unknowns, and we're talking about those today. So ultimately, it comes down to workforce safety, readiness, productivity, and the risks to both workers and Alaskans, as well as increasing risks of employers. And so we want to focus on that and hope that as you go through this process, as you consider and deliberate, that you take into account the fact that we as a business community need certainty, and for those that want to engage into the commercial aspects of marijuana, they're going to need certainty and predictability as well. Ultimately, we want Alaskans to have great opportunities to work. We want to keep people safe. The business community has done a great job of reducing workforce incidents, yet we still have among the highest workers' comp rates in the nation. So while the incidents go down as we do a better job keeping ourselves and our workers safe on the job, costs are going up, and we don't want to do anything to exacerbate that issue. But really, the most important thing is the safety of our workforce and all Alaskans. And so we urge you guys to do what you're doing, be deliberate, and to give us, as the business community as a whole, and those entering the new industry, that predictability and guidance. So look to other states. I know that's happening. I think there's a lot to be learned from Washington and Colorado. Not sure how far along Oregon is, I think it's better to have be deliberative and get good practices in place initially rather than rushing to do it and having to come back and fix things. In other words, let's limit the risks involved to everyone.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, and thank you, Ms. Petro, for all you do for Alaskan businesses. So the supporters so far of the initiative have said that they don't believe legalization in the case of a 21-year-old adult for recreational purposes up to 1 ounce interferes with a business's right to retain a zero tolerance policy for drugs in the workplace. And so that's been their mantra, what they've said. So as Judiciary Chair alongside Senator Stoltz, here in State Affairs, we're trying to figure out, you know, in many different facets, where does the legislature need to speak and where is there a lack of clarity? So you mentioned in your testimony that, and I agree, uncertainty, lack of clarity is the enemy of business. Where would you like to see the legislature be more clear about workplace zero tolerance use of marijuana? And you mentioned the fact that Washington State and Colorado were ahead of us, and maybe you could give us some examples of how they further iterated in state law that, you know, your recreational use of marijuana, much like recreational use of alcohol or any other thing, does not somehow give you a right in the workplace that you didn't have before.
Through the chair, Senator Aguirre, I'm certainly not an expert. As the chamber, we're kind of we deal with everything from soup to nuts, and frankly, ballot measure two passed, and we know are supporting your efforts to do due diligence. So I'm happy to work with my counterparts across the country, and if they have resources, happy to connect the dots there. In regard to the zero tolerance policy, I mean, we're making that very clear and encouraging not just our members, but local chamber members and whatnot to become in the business community in general to be familiar with the fact that if you want zero tolerance policy, you better get it in place now. There's certain enforcement that you need to do as an employer, which, you know, the cost of testing and regular testing and the rigors of that will cost some businesses who decide they want to have a drug-free workplace and a marijuana-free workplace. They'll have to make that decision. As far as suggestions, Senator Aguirre, we have not delved into that. We're watching the process, want to encourage you guys to do the due diligence, and I think that's the opportunity we finally have since we weren't able to craft as Alaskans something that made sense initially. Now we have that opportunity and are very supportive of you guys of doing that. Time, just be deliberative. That's the most important part is getting this right the first time and not putting any undue risk.
And I think one thing we want to make sure is that as we're formalizing the people's initiative, that we don't make the expand on a right that interferes with public safety and what has been it. It's been my opinion that all those workplace requirements would stay in place, but I'm not a judge. I don't make laws. That's it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may, one concern is the impairment levels, the difference between consumption of alcohol and consumption of marijuana. One is fat soluble, that's marijuana. One is water soluble, and the testing abilities and lack thereof, and those levels of impairment. Those are all real concerns, and again, part of the reason that we looked at ballot measure two and said, I don't think that we don't have all the answers yet, and so those are big questions that I'm not sure where the scientific community is on resolving those as far as ease of testing if they're at the roadside, if it's public officials and whatnot. So those are certainly open questions and areas of concern, because if we have an employee on their own time on a Friday doing what's perfectly legal, but what is their impairment, that could look different for any number of people if they come to work on Monday. So those are issues that other employers in other states are starting to have issues with. So they're real, and we just need to be thoughtful.
Well, just thinking through the chair, just in wrap up on it, that I appreciate your testimony, and I do think that the medical testing technology is not where people would like it to be, and we have heard testimony from the Department of Public Safety that there currently is no roadside test, that you actually have to take a blood test in order to determine impairment levels where marijuana is present. So that their method is they sort of rule out alcohol first, and if they can rule that out, then they go to the next level. So I share the concerns that you have and the complexity of it, and we just say that as you go back to your resources, other state chambers, maybe Washington State Chamber, Colorado State Chamber, that if you could forward any resources or information on to me and to Senator Stoltz, that would be really helpful. And maybe there's placeholder language, such that in the criminal bill that we say, no decriminalization trumps a workplace drug-free right, that type of a thing. I don't know the answer to that yet, like you don't, but I certainly would agree with Senator Stoltz that when it comes to minors, when it comes to workplace use, driving under the influence, all those kinds of the things that where your liberty starts to infringe on someone else's, I guess is how I always view it, the John Stuart Mill model, that you have certain individual rights up until that point where your right begins to interfere with other members of society and their rights. And I think the workplace is certainly something where you have people driving heavy equipment. You have people making deliveries in cars. I mean, there are just all types of things that I can imagine that you'd be considering. So I look forward to any information that you have.
Absolutely, through the chair. Thanks, Senator McGuire. And, I think it's very important to remember that we have many, many of our employers in the state already have a zero tolerance because they have federal mandate to be zero tolerance just for the type of work. But I think that the gray area comes really it's legal and, I did all my own time. And those impairment levels. So that gray area is really. So appreciate your due diligence on this.
Yeah. I want to put one clarification on the record. There's a lot of humorless critics who also operate blogs. I know the legislature makes the laws. I just can't do it in one edict by myself like a judge can. So with that, thank you, Ms. Petro. And we've had some folks patiently waiting online. We have Joey Crum from Northern Industrial Training. Mr. Crum, are you still there?
I am.
Thank you, sir. Identify yourself and any affiliations you wish to disclose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Joey Crum. I'm the president and CEO of Northern Industrial Training, and I'm also an executive board member of the Alaska Trucking Association.
Okay, your comments. You heard some of the previous discussion. Anything you would wish to share with the committee from your experience as an employer and a trainer, folks involved in workforce development?
Well, to echo Mrs. Petro's statements about the federal mandates that a lot of us face, all of us that are regulated under the Federal Motor Safety Carrier Act and Department of Transportation are under federal mandates. And we've even got releases out that 49 CFR Part 40, that regardless of the state's initiatives, the Department of Transportation's drug and alcohol testing does not authorize the use of Schedule 1 drugs, including marijuana, for any reason. So for us, that means that we are already a zero-tolerance industry. And the federal government has mandated that regardless of the state initiatives, that we still have to follow that zero-tolerance mandate. Our concerns on this one are that with an industry that has a growing shortage in skilled workers, that things like labeling and accidental consumption are very detrimental to us as an industry. For example, if the federal government requires us to do a pre-hire drug screening of every one of our personnel involved in a safety-sensitive industry, and they require that 50% of, say, truck drivers that I employ every year are randomly tested. Now, that 50% is based on a formula. If the randoms during that 50% increase, the number of tests that I'm required to do will increase as well. So there is a worry about increasing costs to the industry, accidental consumption that results in having to immediately remove the personnel from their job where they must actually complete a return-to-duty program. And those programs are highly technical and defined and take a long time to actually complete. So basically, if we do have somebody during the random that fails the drug test, they become unuseful as an employee to the industry. So as the Trucking Association, that is our main concern, is that we really focus on education. As an industry, we try to make it known that anything that involves driving of commercial motor vehicles is a lifestyle and not a job. And those people have to make responsible and adequate choices. What we are concerned about is the accidental consumption. I believe it was Dr. Butler that brought up packaging with, if you don't have your eyeglass, it might be hard to distinguish. And we would like to echo that. Speaking as an employer, in capacity for Northern Industrial Training, we are a part of the IS Net World, which is basically a data warehouse required by all of the oil producers, and in it has performance data, safety ratings, et cetera. And as a condition of enrollment, our entire company has to be part of a DISA drug testing program where we have a zero tolerance. So as an employer, I am concerned about the, now I'm going to be competing with a with industry for a shrinking employee pool. And what really concerns is the students. The day after ballot measure 2 was passed, we received 14 phone calls from potential students asking us if our drug policy for those that want to be accepted into training would now be revoked. And what I'm concerned about is what it's going to do our potential workforce. I respect liberty and choice. I am concerned and hope that we have a public campaign on education and very... To echo Mrs. Petro again, very predictable and certain laws regarding advertising, packaging, where it can be sold, and the hours to which it can be sold.
Thank you, Mr. Krim. Senator Coghill.
Thank you for your testimony. Thanks for coming before the committee and taking the time out of your day to share with us. In the zero tolerance policy, at this point under your drug testing, is it a THC or a CBD level that you get at this point? Is that something that falls into the zero tolerance level?
Yeah, so right now all of the drug tests that we do, they are the DOT sanctioned panel tests. So they have levels in there, and then once that level is hit, it becomes zero tolerance.
That's Mr. Chairman, that's probably a test requirement that we should be aware of somewhere along the line. So that's a Department of Transportation issue, or is that a federal requirement or state requirement?
Senator, through the chair, that is a federal requirement that would be spelled out in the Federal Motor Safety Carrier Regulations.
Okay, that's something that we should be aware of. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony. Do you know... I guess number one, what type of test it is? Is it hair, urine, or blood? And then do you know what the level is for CBD or THC over which you would be in violation?
Senator, through the chair, I apologize. I had a technical difficulty. I did not hear the question.
Okay. So it's two parts. Number one is the type of test, or what's used, blood, urine, or hair. And then do you know the level of CBD or THC over which you a person would be in violation?
Thank you for the clarification. Through the chair, it is a urine test currently for the DOT FMCSA standards, and I do not know offhand the level, but I would volunteer to get that and forward that regulation if you would wish.
Yeah, I would.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
That was going to be my request.
Thank you. And this is not meant to, I'm not even sure this is a policy that the legislature even gets into and determines. I don't think it appears to be something that's at a higher pay grade than us, but this really came to my mind to invite just a handful of people as part of starting the public education process so people that decide to do the recreational aspect know that some of the consequences. And it actually initiated when members of the organized labor, the AFL-CIO event here, talked to numerous business agents who got similar phone calls or conversations with the folks they're trying to put to work saying, well, you can't test, you can't make me be tested anymore. And said, well, can't make anybody hire you either. And that was the, not for us to have an evaluative judgment about whether testing is appropriate or not, or it's going to be part of a statute, but part of a volley of public awareness. And I suspect those employers will as well be part of that on a because they want to put people to work, and that you want a job, think twice about whether or not. And I think I've seen those types of advertised in the past. This is not for us to make any kind of statutory change or anything, but just total public awareness. And it really started with conversations with some of my friends who work as business agents trying to put people to work and keep them at work. And just totally public information. And that's that was the purpose of having this initial volley on this. The expectations, as we know, even when we talk about introducing a bill, the public often thinks it's already passed, and sometimes the governor will even say he's going to veto it before it's drafted. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also, the reason I asked the questions I did was we heard some testimony in previous committees that marijuana can stay in your system for months sometimes. And so I think it's going to be very important for people. There's federal mandates, and for people to understand that if you go out and use marijuana on the weekend, you get tested on Monday morning, or maybe even 2 weeks later, you could possibly lose your job. So I think figuring out, educating the Alaska population is going to be very important.
And Ms.
Senator Coghill.
Mr. Chairman, just to dovetail on that, I wanted to make it also to those who are listening in and those who are testifying to us, the conundrum they're going to find, because in Alaska, we're heading in the direction of making it a regulated thing like alcohol. The federal government, under those requirements, still see it as a controlled substance. And no matter how we do it, we're going to run into these things where, between transportation and zero tolerance policies, we're going to have to be able to respect both cadres of law. And that's the initiative wants it to be legal until it's shown dangerous to the public, where the federal government at this point has said that's a controlled substance under all circumstances. So those are the things that we're continually having to bump up against. And here with the DOT requirements for driving and zero tolerance policies for work safety, that's going to be what we're having to continually try to figure out how to implement.
Is there anybody else here or online to discuss that? Just any comments on the employer issue as a part of the record? Thank you. I think we'll stop here today. We probably don't have time to get started in without going over, and I don't know, try to respect everybody else's schedules. I do want to just make sure that I know a lot of the public is following and listening to these proceedings great deal of interest, and when we do get to the public testimony, there is no way that we'll get to it in the confines of a 90-minute meeting twice a week. And I know it's going to cause some challenges for some members, but we're going to have to do evening testimony. I think there's going to be a lot of public interest to provide their comments, concerns, and help us with input on direction. It's a critical part of the process, but we're going through a deliberative process and taking a lot of invited testimony, and it's our hope that folks that consider themselves experts or organizations that have that, please put in that request to ask us to provide that as a more structured, invited testimony, so we're not stuck to whatever confines of minutes limit for somebody that has a lot of detailed knowledge on this issue. Make those official requests to us, and we'll do our best to accommodate them. And when we do get to public testimony, we're going to have 100, with Senator Wilkowski, Alaskans first, and that will be our deference. We're not going to have everybody trumping folks from Metlakatla, Barrow, calling in on their views on what our laws are. If there are national experts that the sponsors want to invite, please do it through so we can have a deliberative segment of time to talk to those people. It wouldn't do anybody any justice to have it during a 3 or 5 minute segment. So as we're planning for the departure, when the bill does move out, when we have a bill. Senator Coghill.
If I could just comment, first of all, the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation gave us a really good answer to many of the questions. And so for those in the public on, you know, what hash oil is, what the plants are, they did just an excellent job of instructing us. And so that's available, and And I just wanted to share my appreciation for the good substantive answers.
And it's our intent, my intent to, before we start the public testimony and the final deliberation on the bill that will eventually be before us, that we have the sponsors back again and plenty of time to amplify whatever points they initially made and to comment on public testimony, department testimony and other testimony. So it's we'll have the sponsors back before us, at, and they are communicating to us as they are through that document. So we'll have the best process we have, and we're going to use our 290 minutes a week as efficiently as we can to fulfill our mandate. With that, we're adjourned.